Without any further ado, our fearless leader, co-writer of the new Black Christmas, witchy woman, April Wolf.
Welcome to Switchblade Sisters, where women get together to slice and dice our favorite action and genre films. I'm April Wolf, as aforementioned. Every week, I invite a new female filmmaker on, a writer, director, actor, producer, and we talk in depth about one of their fave genre films, maybe one that influenced their work in some small way. Today, I'm very excited as we broadcast live from Fantastic Fest in Austin 2019. I'm very excited to have the filmmaker, Maddie Doe, here. Hi, Maddie, come on up.
This is already delicious, you guys. We started with a mimosa, bright and early. It's not fucking early, but like I think it is.
It's pretty fucking early for me.
Yeah,
exactly. I should have said, coming from Fantastic Fest, where all of us are a little bit hungover. So...
But we gotta be hungover like fucking fabulously, right? Like that's how we do.
So I wanted to anoint you as a guest. I'm not telling you what movie we're watching yet, but here is our clue, obviously. Oh, she's a witch. I'm putting a hat on her. She's now a witch. She's
by the Dark Lord.
Yeah.
By the Lordess. What's the word?
Lords. Let's have a seat here. For those of you who aren't as familiar with Maddie's work, please let me give you an introduction as well. Born to Lao refugees, Maddie was raised in Los Angeles, but returned permanently to Laos a decade ago. Her debut film, I'm not sure the pronunciation on this.
Tantali.
Was the first Lao film to screen outside of Southeast Asia. Its festival success led to Maddie's selection for the Cannes Fabrique de Cinéma du Monde and TIFF's Director's Talent Lab, along with Berlinale Talents and Bifan's Fantastic Film School. Afterward, Maddie worked with the Ministry of Culture to create the infrastructure necessary to introduce foreign co-production to Laos, including a framework for managing the country's rigid censorship, which... If you've seen her work before, she's getting around a lot of things.
This film has a body count, y'all.
That's good. Maddie produced Laos's first American and Japanese co-productions. Her second film, Dearest Sister, which is available on Shudder right now, receives special jury mentions at Sitges and Fantasporto, and was later selected as Laos' first submission for the Foreign Language Film Award at the 90th Academy Awards. Her third film...
I didn't win.
What? You didn't?
No, for reals, I didn't. You saw me eating like this chocolate gold rabbit that was from her from Switzerland. It wasn't the Oscar.
Oh, no. Oh, sorry. I'm so sorry to bring that up. That's that you lost.
I don't mind. I like the chocolate rabbit better.
Her third film, The Long Walk, which I think many of you will be seeing after this show if you're at Fantastic Fest, premiered in the Giornate degli Autori at the 76th Venice Film Festival in 2019. And she is the first and only female filmmaker of Laos. So doing it for herself. Oh my God, I forgot. We actually have a special guest. Is Black Phillip here? Casey is bringing Black Phillip to the stage. He's ascending. Black Phillip has taken a seat between the two of us.
His coat is so delicious. You guys, for real, we had so many goats on the set of this film that's playing today. And we like would chase them away and they'd get into our trash all the time on set. And there were some Black Phillip type goats. Let me adjust you here, honey.
And I know.
And I was like, it's about a guy that's so fucking poor that he can't find anything to eat, except like he has to go scrap metal and like forage for food. And I was like, we gotta chase these goats off set because like if it were me, I'd just fucking kill one of the goats and eat them because
they taste
pretty good. They're a little strong and gamey, but they taste pretty good.
We'll definitely get into some goat talk later on because Maddie's, the film that she chose to talk about today is The Witch, which you guys have already probably figured out at this fucking point. can you give us a little bit of an explanation of why it's one of your fave genre films?
I was blown away by The Witch, you guys. When I saw it, it was a total sensory experience, and it actually helped to define the way I made this film. I don't know the guy, Eggers is his name, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was the wide shots that he has. They're like painted tableaus. It's so artistic. And the camera moves like a character. And the camera, sometimes it's unwilling. Like when you're going into the forest, you're behind the character and it's like pushing you into the forest and it's like pulling you in. And you're like, no, don't fucking go in there. There's a goddamn witch in there. And you're like, nope, I'm going in. The camera's going in, I'm going in. And to me, it redetermined how to use camera language and cinema language to make a film. And also, like, come on, you guys. We're women here, a lot of women, even guys. We all remember what it was like to be a teenager and to be the black sheep or the black goat, as as Black Phillip might say. And, like, your parents fucking hate you. They don't believe anything you say. Everybody's against you. Like, everybody's like, nope, you're lying, you're full of shit, you're the bad one. And you're like trying so hard, like, I'm trying to do this prayer thing, I'm trying to be a good girl, but like nothing you do satisfies anyone. And that's like, I so sympathize with Thomason's character, because I was like, at some point, if everybody just keeps telling you that you're bad, that you're a witch, that you're a fucking bitch, that's what you just become. And it's all right.
Turns out it's not too bad to be a witch, though.
It's a lot more fun.
For those of you who haven't seen The Witch, today's episode, obviously we'll give you some spoilers, but that shouldn't stop you from listening before you watch. As always, my motto is that it's not what happens, but how it happens that makes a movie worth watching. Yeah. Still, if you would like to pause this and you're at home listening, then you want to watch The Witch first, do that right now. And now that you're back.
And we're back.
Let me introduce The Witch with a quick synopsis. Written and directed by Robert Eggers, The Witch stars Anya Taylor-Joy as Thomason, the eldest daughter of settler William and his wife Catherine. Along with Thomason's younger brother Caleb, twin siblings Mercy and Jonas, and the baby Samuel, the family settles in 1630s New England after being banished from the Plymouth Puritan colony for a religious dispute that we don't quite know about.
Then shall you be banished from this plantation's liberties?
I would be glad on it.
The terrain there is harsh, and the family is deeply... deeply disturbed by everything. Very quickly, things go awry when Thomason is playing peekaboo with Samuel, and he mysteriously disappears. Who took the baby? A fucking forest witch is who. Catherine's unraveling. William confesses to Caleb that he sold Catherine's prized silver cup for hunting supplies.
Speak none of this to Mother. None. She's overwrought already. I'll tell her of the cup when her grief has passed. Let's not speak on this again.
I would be fucking pissed. But Catherine thinks Thomason took it.
How thou could lose me father's silver wine cup in this hovel, I cannot know.
Haven't
face, child. He's gone. Did a wolf vanish out too?
One of a number of things they come to blame Thomason for. Catherine wants to sell her off to work for another family. Caleb's fed up, and he's going to set a trap in the forest for this damn witch. Thomason forces him to take her with him, though. On the way, however, Thomason's knocked out cold, and Caleb follows their spooked dog, Fowler, to find it's been disemboweled. And then he finds the witch's hovel. Everyone is mad at Thomason when she comes back. They blame her for losing Caleb.
Tell us why you went to the wood.
I promise.
I cannot.
But then Thomason finds Caleb standing outside in the rain, having a fit of some sort. Caleb coughs up a bloody apple and dies, and everyone's
official... I thought it was like a fucking eyeball.
There's a lot of shit happening.
I thought it was like, eyeball.
There's stuff.
Okay.
There's a lot of stuff. You know.
I watched that movie like a billion times. I thought it was an eyeball. But yeah. Apple's fine too. Adam and Eve, whatever.
His stomach is like Mary Poppins' bag.
It was...
where anything could come out at any time.
Mysterious things, you're right. It contained mysterious items.
There's a lot of possibilities there. So everyone's officially witch crazy. The twins are blaming Thomason, and Thomason's like, they're the ones talking to black billy goat Philip in the barn.
What say you?
Black Philip Sif, you are wicked. Aye, told me too.
Damn your Black Philip.
He said he put the devil in Caleb. That's why he's sick.
I'd never hurt Caleb. nor Sam, nor thee.
You beat me.
'Twas a jest.
You said you'd eat of me.
Mercy.
Mother and father will find out.
What?
That you are a witch.
William locks all the remaining children in the barn with goats, because that's how you punish your children. Meanwhile, Catherine sees a vision of Caleb and Samuel, thinks she's holding Samuel, but she's really getting her breast picked apart by a crow. William wakes up to find the barn is blown to bits, the twins missing, and Thomason with blood on her hands. Before William can do anything, Black Phillip gores him. Then Catherine finds Thomason and tries to kill her daughter, but Thomason stabs Catherine in self-defense. Now Thomason is all alone. Or is she? She finds Black Phillip and demands he speak to her. He asks her,
"Wouldst thou like to live deliciously?"
and transforms into a man before having Thomason undress and sign her name in a black book. Thomason then joins a coven of other witches in the forest, and they dance the night away. So
she flies too, you guys. She like straight legit levitates because she's a fucking witch.
Yeah. Again, it's not that bad. So I wanted to get straight into the setup of this movie. Things happen very quickly. There's not a lot of, I mean, we consider this to be almost a slow burn type of film, but the plot sets off very quickly. You get into the baby Samuel missing like right away.
It's like in the first 10 minutes. In the beginning, you think the inciting incident is them being banished from their settlement.
Mm-hmm.
And it does seem like, I mean, it is an inciting incident, but in reality, like, shortly after that, the baby goes missing. Like, I was like, balls on this director to just be like, and bam, the baby's missing, and here's your film, you know?
Yeah.
It was like,
no waste of time.
Incredible.
But let's get into the idea of you begin a movie with a bang. This baby goes missing. What does that tell you in terms of, you know, how you kind of construct the stories that you tell? You know, because it could take a long time to get into it, but this is a movie that doesn't waste any time.
Right. And I super respect this film for that. Like, I am so impressed by the way this Robert Eggers does not waste any time. He gets like straight into it. And we're dealing with this trauma right away, that Thomason lost the baby, that this family has suffered this loss, and it's the father and the mother are trying to wash it away like it didn't happen. Because to be honest, when you're in that, we live similarly to this still in Laos. Many places are still like this. We just got to move on. The next day is here. We got to survive. And starting the film with a bang like this, I respect it so much because my films are actually slow burn films. Like, slow. But, like, they pay off, you know? You pay attention to all the details. You're there with my films from beginning to end. And then I think my films are, like, big bang films at the end. So you, like, add up all these small details. You follow this. Someone wants... Do you guys know who Liam Gavin is? He did A Dark Song. He's a good friend of mine. And he was like, if someone were to thank you, I love Negronis.
A Negroni was just brought to the stage.
Yes. Aperol spritz, mi scusa, dai. That's my producer. She's Swiss. She knows. But Liam said, if you could describe your film like a roller coaster ride, what would you say? And I'd be like, it's the slowest ascent. Like, you don't even realize you're headed uphill. And then in my film, suddenly you realize when you're looking off the cliff face that you're about to fucking drop and there's probably no safety net. That's my film. But Eggers is like, I dropped you off the fucking cliff. And now how do we deal with this shit? And I love that. Like, I want to do that. Like, I really want to do that.
It's nice that you have an appreciation and this admiration for someone who does a kind of opposite way of storytelling.
I love his storytelling. Sense. Like, I did not see The Lighthouse yet.
I haven't either.
But I'm dying to see it because I love this film so much.
I'm Travis McElroy.
I'm Courtney Enlow.
I'm Brent Black, and we're the hosts of Trends Like These.
Trends Like These is an internet news show where we take the stories trending on social media and go beyond the headlines.
We'll give you the actual facts of the story and not just the knee-jerk reactions.
Plus, we end every episode with a ray of hope that we call the Wi-Fi of the week.
So join us every Friday on Maximum Fun.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trends Like These, real-life friends talking internet trends.
I would love to get into working with children. This is a this is a big thing that happened for Robert Eggers, was the fact that, you know, he's got a first feature film and he's working with goats and children. They always tell you don't do that for your first movie. And of course, he brought people to the middle of nowhere to work with goats and children. So he was working with a lot of kids, and he said, quote, "Their parents had to read the script and know what they were getting into, and a lot of parents wouldn't let their children audition for the film. Holy the shit. Young children never had the full understanding of what the story was in order to protect them." The young kids, there were sides, line readings where we would do some scene work, but there was also, especially with the littlest boy, a lot of improv. So you have that the small child, the twins. You can tell that, like, the
with Jonas, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah. So they apparently, those twins, when they got together, they had to cast them, you know, simultaneously to find, like, the right chemistry with them. So it was a lot of telling them to tell a story. So he sat them down and was like, "I need you guys to kind of tag team and tell me a story." And so they told him a story, and it was thrilling, and they just kind of kept bouncing it back and forth, the details, and that was how he decided. It was like, these kids are hilarious, and they obviously work well together. What's your experience with working any kids? Would you like to work with children?
This film tonight, today, after this podcast,
really
stars a child, a 9-year-old boy, actually. He's like the star of the film.
Yeah, so let's get into that.
To be honest, Enik, my producer, and my husband, who's my screenwriter and also a producer, they were nervous. You were less nervous, Enik, I have to admit. You were less nervous about that. You didn't give a shit.
But Enik says, "I didn't care."
My husband was so nervous because the script is so dense for the little boy. And it's a tough film. Like, it's a very complex film. It's very multi-layered and many faceted. It's a tough film emotionally. This little boy basically suffers one of the largest traumas of his life. And an abuse as well. And my husband was just like, "What are we going to do? How are we going to get it? You got to go find some 14 or 15-year-old boy that's just really stunted." And I was like, "I mean, I do live in Laos, so it's a possibility. Like, look at me. Like, shit. I'm like half the size of a human." No, but I found my little boy 2 days before the shoot. 2 days before principal shooting.
That's such a witchy thing to say. I found my little boy 2 days before the
show. No, it was totally fucking witchy like that too. Because, like, I never cast for films. I don't like casting. We don't have professional actors in Laos. Issa, hi. I've been looking for you.
Sorry, I know this woman.
She's in my Korean pop band that's not Korean.
Issa Lopez has approached the stage. For a hug.
No, it's okay. She's like the front man of my band. So with this little boy, it's like, my husband's like, "You have to cast." And my Lao producer, Duong Mani, was like, "You have to cast. Like, you can't just do this thing, Maddie, where you go out in the street and be like, 'Would you like to be in a film? I met you in an ice cream shop. I'm for real as a filmmaker. Like, just sign this contract. I will pay you. You must show up on time, you know?'" And he's like, "We can't do that shit with a child." And I was like, "Oh, we can't?
Would you like some candy, little kid?
Would you like to live deliciously?" You know, like. And so I fucking cast, you guys. We had like 40 kids come over. They came over at once. I took them like in a big group. We played. I told some, "Thank you, go home." I whittled it down to a group of 5 kids, and we played some games. I mean, it's just on the fly. We played games. And then I picked one. And then in the end, that one kid ended up with my main old man actor in a school project. It was like a PSA, public service announcement thing. And he threw a fit during the shooting of this PSA. Threw a huge fit and just refused to work. And my actor, who'd worked with me in Dear Sister before, calls me like a few nights before principal photography. And he's like, "You can't use this kid. He's a little shit. Like, you can't use this kid. He sucks. He really is. He's horrible. Like, he just, like, got on the ground kicking and screaming, and he, like, went home." And I was like, "Oh, fuck." Because, like, a PSA is one day shoot. A film is 28, 16 hour days, you know? And I'm like, oh shit. He's like, but I saw this little boy. He's really cute. He's dark like me because the characters have to look like each other. And in Laos, we're very multi-ethnic, like mixed. And so we range from like light colors to dark colors. And I needed a boy that looks like my old man. And he was like, and he didn't cry once. And he was super nice. And so I was like, I hung up the phone. My producer and I got into a fucking car and we drove to the village that this little boy lived in. It was nuts. So like we went there and then all the parents and all the aunties and uncles were like, oh my God, Maddie Doe. They like kind of knew who I was. They're like, she's here. She's going to like give her family some money. He's like, cry for her. Can you cry? Pretend to cry. Can you dance? Sing her a song. Sing her a song. It was like, dance, monkey, dance. And I was like, do you want to go play? Like, let's go play. And so I just took him away from the adults. And we just had a little talk. We played pretend. I let his little brother come with me. His little brother was like 3 years old. And we played some games. And I was like, I liked him. He liked me. For me, working with kids is more about your personal relationship. If they trust you, they will be willing to go the extra mile for you, as long as they trust you. And so I just got to his level and I was like, it was like Black Phillip was like, do you want to live deliciously? I was like, what would you do? If I put you in a movie, what would you want? Like anything. What do you want? Would you like to live deliciously? And he's like, well, I'd like a fucking bike. And he's like, what color? He's like, I don't know, maybe red or rainbow. I was like, I can do that. I can do that. Because reality is if when I give him his actor salary, he doesn't know. He doesn't see it. It goes into his food, his clothes, his school tuition. Like, he doesn't experience that. His parents and his family does. So I was like, you will get a bike. And then 2 days later, he was fucking on set shooting. He had no concept of the script because the script was super complicated. And I was just feeding him bits of the story and what he needed to do in the scene. And what we improvise a lot on my film. So I'd be like, what would you feel if this person said this to you and they really meant that? And he'd be like, I'd be like this. It's like, okay, let's shoot that like this. And my husband was just shocked. But the reality is like, he shouldn't have doubted me. I'm a fucking ballet teacher. You know, like my job was to make six-year-olds like plie on stage for 6 minutes and like do the little turn in the same direction all at once. So like, I got that.
I gotta say so we look at you'll see The Long Walk, but if you look at The Long Walk and if you look at what Eggers is doing with the children, you have two directors who are putting children through terrible things. And that's
the
process of doing that. Obviously, you want to protect the children, but you need to get that performance out of them. Eggers said, quote, because I'm going to talk about the possession scene where he's possessed.
Oh, that
Caleb
was incredible.
Possessed, and that,
that
performance is really wonderful. But this is what Eggers said about that. He said, where is it? We were going into deep, dark, horrific psychological places, and we had to create a safe environment to crawl out of that stuff. With the little children, they had to be protected. They couldn't be going into deep, dark places. These are places they should not be going. So they had to have a Disney-fied understanding of what the film was. And for Harvey, who plays Caleb, it's like a dance. We worked on the possession scene more than any other scene, and the parents, particularly Ralph Ineson, were so damn helpful. And Harvey's father was helpful too. They really worked with him, just drilling and drilling and drilling because, and this is the very important part, I knew that if that scene didn't work, the film wouldn't work. A lot of things hinged on that. So
it's
I'm
so
grateful
true.
To everyone for being so collaborative in that scene and really supporting Harvey and keeping him safe psychologically while bringing that to the screen. We have a clip of that just to remind everyone too. So intense. One of the techniques that Eggers was using on set too is that acting technique of getting your physical self ready for it. So even if you don't have an understanding of what's happening in the scene, you know, like the kids were protected from that stuff, he would be like, breathe very quickly until you're almost going to pass out. Like the, and then you get panicked and then you look scared because your body feels scared. And so he was doing, very kind of basic theater techniques to get those kids working.
He came from a theater background, I had heard.
Exactly, yeah. He was in production design and costuming before that, which obviously you can tell there's such a...
It's a beautiful film. The art direction is incredible in that film.
The art direction is wonderful, but I do think that we should say that one of the things that he always gets asked about all the time is his production design, and he doesn't really, like, he cares about it, obviously, and he cares about authenticity, but he was a little bit kind of nervous or weirded out by the fact that people were more focusing on that as though it was just authenticity for authenticity's sake, as opposed to...
I'm so fucking sick of this authenticity word, like, for reals. I'm sorry, like, it's a movie about a goddamn witch, and it's like, fucking settlers. My movie is a time travel serial killer film set in rural Laos. I had some random person say that my film comes from deep-seated inauthenticity. And I'm like, okay, like, maybe it does, because, like, how many time travelers do you know? like, tell me. I would like to meet them. Not if they're a serial killer, though, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, for reals. We make cinema. We make magic. We make escapism. Yes, it's imbued with our personal feelings. It's imbued with authenticity and with our perspective and our bias. But let us make our magic on screen. And that was fucking magic.
Let me also give an Eggers quote about authenticity. He said, basically, with authenticity for authenticity's sake, there's nothing really important about it. I mean, who cares? But for the designers, for the key crew members, having a golden fish so you all know what you're fishing for, that's exciting. And that made a very high bar for everyone. Everyone was super pumped to live up to that standard, especially since we knew how demanding it would be making a movie on the scale. So even though you think, you know, like, he's doing the authenticity because it's like, it's going to be great, it's going to look great, for him it was more about banding the crew together to attempt to get them all on board of this is what we're searching for. Even if it wasn't attainable, even if it seemed insane.
He's not a historian.
No, he's not. You know? He just wanted everyone to get together to have a goal. Yeah. When you have a goal together and you're all working towards the same thing, it feels more united.
There's this film called Blood Quantum that played at TIFF, and it's made by, I don't know him, but he knows my husband. He helped my husband with some research, Jeff Barnaby, and he's an indigenous person. And there were these comments made about the film that were like, oh my God, like, he missed an opportunity. He could have done more indigenous, like, story. He could have been more authentic, blah, blah, blah. And he made this amazing comment where he was like, this is like a 95-minute film. If you think I can unravel 300 years of indigenous oppression in a 95-minute film, like, you've come to the wrong film. Like, you're in the wrong place. Like, and this is it. Like, I love this film. It's incredible. And what is authentic is the feeling of Thomason's isolation, the family's isolation, and the fact that she's being outcast by the people that should love her and that should trust her most, and that she's chosen the dark side, sorry, Philip, because no one trusted her and no one respected her as a young woman. The terror is so real to this family.
Hey, if you like your podcast to be focused and well-researched and your podcast host to be uncharismatic, unhorny strangers who have no interest in horses, then this is not the podcast for you.
Again, what's your deal? I'm Emily.
I'm Lisa.
Our show's called Baby Geniuses.
And its hosts are horny adult idiots. We discover weird Wikipedia pages every episode.
We discuss institutional misogyny.
We ask each other the dumbest questions, and our listeners won't stop sending us pictures of their butts.
We haven't asked them to stop, but they also aren't stopping.
Join us on Baby Geniuses
every other week on MaximumFun.org.
I want to get to something that you had actually mentioned before, which is the cinematography, the shot composition here, because it's really beautiful. Cinematographer is Jaron Blaschke, who worked with Eggers before on many short films, and I believe also now shot The Lighthouse, which will be coming out. He said, quote, this is Jaron saying this, what we do is he goes off and makes a shot list, and I do the same, and then we kind of meet and build these things together with both of our ideas. But at least on my end, the shots just kind of came out of me in what sort of felt right. I think perhaps we tend to do movements on the Z-axis, you know, less lateral. We do lateral moves too, but I think things that can kind of pull you toward things against your will, something that she says.
That's fucking funny.
Hopefully that's the feeling sometimes. I think I read a review somewhere that said the camera never moves. I'll take that as a compliment, but we were building track all day long,
dude,
every day.
The camera is always moving.
And
I
the
don't
camera's
know, like,
constantly were moving. Yeah.
It's always moving, that camera.
But that's the thing. He's talking about the impression of stillness that they're doing with a moving camera. If he says that he's taking it as a compliment, it's so clear that the moves are so precise. And I like what he's talking about, the Z-axis,
yeah,
too.
And it's subtle. It's because he's always on tracks and on a carrello. So, what's the word for carrello in English?
I don't know.
Carrello.
Are there any other Lao people here?
Yeah. The cart on the train tracks. Dolly. Dolly. It's because he's always on this fucking dolly. So it is still... But depending on the speed, he's got this like slow push in. And that's that like that pull, that hypnotizing tug that pulls you in. It's incredible. Like, I love his DOP.
And Eggers, his apparently his only direction to Jaron Blaschke was to make it feel like you're transporting an audience with every frame is like we're articulating a personal memory. That's what he was saying. Every frame has to be articulating a personal
I felt
memory.
Like every frame was a painting. It felt like a Renoir or something. Not Renoir, yeah. Sorry, that's a fucking wrong artist. Rembrandt. Yeah. Rembrandt. It felt like a Rembrandt painting. I loved it. Like, especially the moment, spoiler alert, when she stabs her mother. And there's this wide shot of just the house in the background. And this house that you now know is not occupied, is empty, because the entire family has fallen apart. And she's kneeling over her mother, and she's splattered in blood, and her mother's body is, like, lifeless. And you realize that the house has nothing, she has nothing, and it's captured in this... It really is, like, a painting.
Yeah, you can sense that isolation. How do you approach working with your cinematographer?
Anik is laughing. We fired her first
producer.
Cinematographer. For reals, you're right.
Wait, what happened?
We let him go is what Anik has asked me to say in public.
That's such
on
a
opening,
kind way
on
to say
opening
it.
Day of Fantastic Fest, Anik had to leave her festival duties, which, as you know, she works with Fantastic Fest, not only in the capacity of bringing her films, but also as a programmer. So she's doing intros. She's, like, really fucking busy. And she actually had to leave the cinema and make phone calls to let go. Part ways with this DOP who we had creative differences, is a word, with. Like, he just, it was horrible. And I remember I was sobbing. I was like, the film is over. We shot 5 days. We can't recoup that. Like, and everybody got scared. Like, everybody got cold feet. Everybody was like, this film is never coming back. And Anik was like, I will find you a DOP. Todd Brown was like, I will find you a DOP. And I
and
had,
you were
like,
shooting in Laos, right?
I was shooting in Laos. Like, you have to, like, be a certain brand of hardcore to come to Laos and shoot, you know? Like, really, like, you want crafty? It's like, well, we got some berries growing in that bush over there. Like, you could try them out. Like, you know, it's like, I got bit by a mosquito. Well, I hope you don't get the dengue.
So you had insurance on your set,
no,
right?
Right. And so, like, I'm like, it's... And to be honest, when we started, like, when we started auditioning all these DOPs, it wasn't about the reel. I actually really fucking hate reels. So, like, note to industry people out there, don't ever send Maddie Doe a reel because she will just, like, shoot you down. I like full works. Like, you send me what you shot that's a full, complete work because anybody can assemble... 1 minute of 2 second shots that look hot and slick, right? But so after I decided on the kinds of people like I kind of like, their style, their aesthetic, Anik and I started the hard sell. We're like, you don't want to go to Laos. It's like making a film on your worst camping trip ever. Like, it's hot, it's humid. You're gonna have the diarrheas. The food is really, really spicy. Like, you're not gonna, like, it's not gonna be cool. You're gonna be on a dirt road. You're gonna get sunburned. Like, you don't wanna come to Laos. And then the motherfuckers that were like, I wanna come to Laos, we're like, okay, next. Like, let's narrow this down. And in the end, I had like 20 people. I narrowed it down this DOP, who is incredible, Matthew McCarr is wonderful. He worked similarly with me and Eggers. He had 2 days to prep. Literally, David Lawson, Aaron Moorhead, and Justin Benson told Anik, we have this guy. He needs his first feature. And he recommended this guy who was willing to work in a country with no money, no technology, no infrastructure. He was like, what kind of diffusers have you got? I was like, well, we got this bag from the grocery store. It's white and semi like transparent. So like, it's like a diffuser, right? That's diffusion. And he was like, okay, that's cool. I got it. I mean, like wax paper would be better because it wouldn't melt. And we fucking made a film. But to be honest, April, like he came, he got off the plane in Bangkok. We went and picked him up. We got some new camera gear and I gave him like a 55-page shot list. And I was like, this is my shot list. And then I gave him another 30-page document. This is my scene breakdowns. And I was like, you're never gonna see a lens selected in here because I'm not a fucking technical person. I don't come from a film background. I come from a ballet background. And I'm gonna talk about the camera in an emotional way, like the way the camera moves in here. And if you can't handle that, there's a fucking door, we'll find someone else. And he's like, no, I got this, I got this. And it worked out beautifully, actually.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's good that that person was let go.
He straight up said, Maddie Doe, you speak about 6 languages, but you don't speak the language of cinema. For reals, you guys. He said, you don't speak the language of cinema. And I was like, well, I don't know what fucking dick language that is, but I don't care to speak it.
Hopefully you can hear people clapping in the audience.
I like them.
So that's a great place to kind of wrap things up and introduce Issa again, because Issa Lopez is going to join us on stage. Issa, could you come up here?
I don't think it's on.
But I can't talk very loudly.
Issa is like my pet pal, my forever sister.
Yeah, and but we had never met in the flesh. And
now we're like fleshy and stuff.
Yes. So here we are. And April and I know each other since the very birth of this podcast, right?
Yeah.
And
Issa awesome. Was our... you're stepping on my cord.
I'm so sorry.
God, Issa. Issa was the first guest that we ever had to record, even though it wasn't the first episode release. But you've been there since the beginning, so
yeah.
You're the best.
Thank you. I'm one of the... You're the best, too. I'm one of the Switchblade original sisters, so yeah.
You're an original cast member.
Yes.
Dude, it's better than our band.
No, nothing is better than our band.
Our band rocks. Our band fucking rocks, yeah.
So Issa's up here because we're going to wrap up this show with a little game. Earlier, Casey had introduced, producer Casey, our peasant woman, had introduced our game of Wouldst Thou Like to Live Deliciously, where everyone had to write down the thing that they would, the most frivolous thing that they would sell their soul to the devil for. And
I mean, it doesn't have to be frivolous. What I love about Issa's film is like, she has the 3 wishes, you know, and she fucking makes those wishes. Estrella makes those wishes. You
yeah,
know?
I know, but.
You guys only have one.
Yes, I will insist on frivolity though. I think it's going to make more. Don't try to save the world. It's beyond saving. Go for something really selfish and decadent.
Let's swim in a pool of champagne.
So wait, what would you? What's the most frivolous thing that you guys would sell your soul to the devil for?
You go first.
Oh shit! Like I'm a simple human being. I'm just like, I would like to. It's, you know, after seeing your film, it seems like every wish would go bad. Because that's how Lucifer does it, right?
That's how it works.
That's how it works.
Ruin yourself.
I would like to have a comfortable life with my mango again. But then mango would probably come out of the ground like, like decaying and zombie if I made that wish, you know? That Mango's true. Dead. He's my dog. He died at 17 years old. Yeah. He's beautiful.
Which it's your Twitter handles inspired by...
Every, Mango. Like, my entire life is inspired by Mango. She's met Mango in his various stages of being alive. Like, you saw him in zombie stage even, right, Anik? But, yeah, like, I would love to have a wonderful life with Mango again.
Now I'm going to sound really frivolous.
Yes, do it. Let it be
thank
just
you,
like
thank
the
you for
pettiest
being
thing.
Touchy and true to your feelings. I would love to have a singing voice. Come on.
I can't sing for shit either.
Like, exactly. Yeah. But wouldn't you love just to be able to... I'm not going to do it because
don't
I
do
don't.
It.
Yeah. Oh.
No, we'll do it.
Should
sometime.
We cheer until yeah. Issa sings something?
No, please, please.
Look at she's shaking her head. She's like, no, don't do
the
it.
The funny thing is I knew that wishes go wrong immediately. So.
You would sing like fucking Ariel and then Ursula would be like, I own your soul. You know, like
no,
that's how it is.
I don't sing for shit. It's true. I don't.
Oh my God. So like we both work with Anik and like the three of us, none of us can sing. No, you can't. You got kicked out of a karaoke bar in Korea. Like they kicked you the fuck out.
All right, Anik is going to sing.
I just, for the record, I was banned from the karaoke at the CGS Film Festival because I was so awesome.
She actually blew a speaker singing Wrecking Ball. And they were like, get this bitch out of here. And I wasn't there, actually. I have to admit, I wasn't there. Everyone was probably there. They got kicked the fuck out because of her.
I love that. So Anik clearly doesn't need a singing voice. So we've got a few of our top selections here. Issa's going to read these aloud, and she's also going to judge them. And she will be picking the winner. So these
wow.
are for you.
Okay. Oh, can wow, that's, I'm happy to read, but
oh my God,
so
that's
difficult.
Such a logical
okay.
one.
So we have a perpetually clean apartment. That's very, very
it's pretty
smart.
Good.
That's good.
It's good, but it's not very frivolous, you guys.
Chicken pot pie.
I can do that for you.
I was going to say, I need to see the soul because we can probably buy
yeah,
this
one. Yeah, we can
one.
Do that. A Klondike bar.
Yes. What would you do for a Klondike bar?
What would you do for a Klondike bar? I can't sing either.
I also want to have good eyesight. So what? Right.
What is it? I can't fucking read that.
Oh, is this great shiny hair? Yeah.
Oh my God, that's a thing. That's a real thing.
Yes,
like,
I considered it. It was on my list.
It wasn't on my list, but like for real, you guys have do you guys know Paris by Night? It's some Asian person knows Paris by Night. It's like a Vietnamese variety show, and all the celebrity girls, singers, uh-huh. not like us.
They have both.
They have this, like, I call it the Vietnamese curtain hair. It hangs and it shines like fucking velvet. And I'm like, I want Vietnamese curtain hair. So, like, maybe
yeah,
you're
that's
right.
Good. That's good.
It's a good wish. It's
a
good
free
wish.
Upgrade from regular to a gel manicure.
Bitch, I can do your manicure. I am half Vietnamese.
We're buying
the
souls
best
today.
Manicures ever.
All right.
Did you see my nails? Did you see my nails? Like.
So you two, can you get together? So Maddie and Issa, can you decide?
I feel bad about the gel manicure thing because, like, for real, legit, I could do that right now.
You can?
I can. Like, I'm awesome at manicure.
I'm going to the fair to the woman who's buying a soul today.
Yeah. You could sell your soul for a shellac manicure. C and D, baby.
All right. So that, we're going to gel manicure? Who did the manicure? Who's got the...
No!
Oh, we got Katie Riot who did the manicure. Katie, can you come up here?
Oh, that is the best.
Folks may know Katie from Katie, can you also we would love for you to sign Maddie's book if you could. She's got something for you to sign.
Can someone give me a pen, please?
Please put your name.
Anik, you're a producer. You have a pen. I know you do.
So Katie Riot is kneeling with her Black Phillip plushie.
And I'm going to do just like in the movie, like, wouldst thou like to live deliciously? Sign your name. And she can write, not like Thomason. Thomason was illiterate, so.
Authenticity.
Now you're one of us, right? One of us.
All right, and that's our show for today. I want to thank everyone for coming. I want to thank Issa Lopez, and I would thank like you. To thank Maddie Doe. Maddie Doe's movie, Dear Sister, is available on Shudder, and her new film, The Long Walk, is working the festivals, and it will be out someday, and just keep tuned for that one. Thank you guys so much for coming.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Kopte.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.